This is a Collider.com audio interview.
I feel like you kind of cramped our style. We all came out with our intros, and then you flooded the table to put down your recording devices. Next time we do this, I want the recording devices here before our intros so we get what we're due.
Wait,
we should come in again.
I look like I'm on crystal meth. Look, even there, I look really well.
Do you mean like feel like it's past tense? I didn't sleep last night. John?
I've never done a sequel before, unless you count me being a under five on Batman Forever as a sequel, as an actor.
It's a sequel.
But it was, for me, there wasn't the same pressures that you're used to feeling, especially coming up with smaller movies.
Pep it up, John, come on.
You're throwing a party and you don't know if people are going to show up. Here we knew people were going to show up. We just want to make sure everybody showed up, had a good time, and this is going to be as fun or more fun than the last party. So, different kind of pressure.
Scarlett Johansson was in Home Alone 3. Don Cheadle, 11, 12, and 13. Those are like secrets. I'm
thanks.
A what?
Thanks. What? Motherfucker?
Okay.
No problem. Nothing.
John, can you talk a little bit about the timeline for Iron Man? How it fits in with Thor, Captain America, and this?
I'll let Kevin feel that
way. That's nifty. I think John has already revealed on his Twitter that Iron Man 2 takes place after or slightly concurrently with The Incredible Hulk. But
Before.
So, what did I say?
After.
No, it's definitely before.
Okay.
I forgot.
You getting the picture?
It is, but it takes place before. But if you pay attention towards the end of the film, you'll see a little clue that tells you that it's happened before The Incredible Hulk.
The whole idea of an Easter egg is you don't talk about it.
Yeah. That's or tweet about it.
Jesus.
My question is for Mr. Favreau. There was a snippet in the trailer where Pepper Potts was on the plane with Tony. Was that meant to be a part of the Stark Expo scene where he's flying down?
Yes.
On the plane?
We had different versions of things that we tried. That was something that was a great image that we love and a scene that's going to be in the DVD. But we had two different versions of it, and because of the pacing and the way to reveal Tony Stark, it felt really good to flow into the drop down and reveal him for the first time on the stage. For those of you who haven't seen the movie, this doesn't make any sense. But oftentimes in the editing room, we figure out what combinations of scenes.
Gwyneth is just finding out that scene was cut, John. You might be a little bit.
You're in for a big surprise, man. There's a
nothing
whole lot
of
stuff
in there.
I'd like to ask Gwyneth and Scarlett. I think the Tony character is a little surprised that you guys can work together quite well later in the movie. And I was wondering, do you think you'd better work together to save the world? Two women like Pepper and Natalie, or two buds like Rhodey and Tony? And why?
Well, if Scarlett and I were doing it, the body count would be different, less bloody.
More organized.
Yeah.
We just stack them. I don't know. I mean, I think that with the brains and the muscle and the beauty and the blonde, I feel like we have maybe a greater chance. But
we're
you guys can fight for yourselves. We are. It's true. Unstoppable. You know? I don't know. I feel like if I could wield the guns and like the karate chop movements, and you can like
outthink people,
be the brains behind the operation. Sure, that's your one superpower. I will outthink you.
This is a little off topic, but for you, Robert, are you going to be the vampire Lestat?
The vampire Lestat. I mean, and anything that's going on, just imagine it's been offered to me.
Precious too.
I like that you imagine we've been on topic so far.
Go
play that character and how much fun you had.
I had a lot of fun. yeah, excuse me?
Can you tell us about
I just spoke out. no, it was nice. It was great. I worked with some great people, and he's really easy to this one here is really easy to work with. Makes it fun. And it was nice because it was like I just came off working with on a film that there was no budget. I didn't even have a chair to sit in. I remember the first day I asked for cappuccino, and they said, "What kind would you like?" And so.
This question is for Robert.
Growing up, no, but in my mid-30s in Palm Springs right before an arrest, yes.
An underwear man, I think it is. An underwear man?
It was a premonition.
Justin and for John, on the first Iron Man, it was sort of famous over here, John.
Hi.
It was sort of famous that you guys discovered a lot on set with the first Iron Man. How much did you guys discover this time? Justin, how much of your script are we seeing on screen, and how much of it is sort of the entire group coming together and working with it and changing things?
it's a heavily improvisational set, you know, and that everyone gets to sort of chime in. So my job, I think, as the writer was sort of just to really just sort of stay on the dance shoes of Robert and John and Gwyneth and everybody and just sort of try and, you know, rewrite things on the fly. So we did have like an extensive development process, obviously, sort of where we actually sort of had a script, and then that ball just keeps rolling into production, and then once we're on set, it gets very frenetic and very fast.
The story is very well fleshed out, the story, but the actual, what has to happen in each scene we understand. We leave a lot of room within those scenes and try to do multiple cameras sometimes or stay up and rewrite. And Justin, you know, he was doing multiple passes, sometimes double-digit passes on scenes because we learn things from each scene that we shoot. We try to shoot pretty much in order. And what's nice about having the actors you see up here is they're all very good stewards of their characters emotionally, and they're used to being in films where you don't have the safety net of all the high technology and the explosions. And so if they have an issue with something we're asking the character to do for the story, we discuss it and we figure out a way so that it could work for them as a performer and also for the movie.
Next question. This question is for Don Chu. Don, your character Rhodey was played by Terrence Howard in the first one. How did you feel when the opportunity arose for you to play the role in this movie? And how cool was it for you to, you know, put on the Iron Man suit? I mean, War Machine suit.
Well, I don't know why the... The War Machine suit was actually made of metal, and his was made of light fiberglass material, but maybe it was just an initiation. But, you know, I felt very fortunate to get the opportunity to work in a film like this. You know, Terrence is a friend, and I've known him for a long time. You know, one of the producers on Crash put him in that. So it was good to also kind of see him and put anything to bed that people may have been thinking about the problem. It wasn't, you know, we're cool. And it was a, you know, look, it's a lot of fun. We get to play with the best toys and the best, you know, technology. So it's just kind of doing what you like to do as a kid, but all fleshed out. A lot of fun.
The reason Don's suit was heavier is that it's almost impossible to get that mirror-like look of a polished metal with CGI. I would not wish it on an enemy.
No, we're going to have to come up with a different substance.
It was horrific.
A different material.
My question is for the three gentlemen on the end here. You got a rogues gallery with Iron Man, but it's not as well known as some of them like Batman or Spider-Man. Were there other villains considered? You talked about the decision to go with Whiplash. Was Mickey's casting part of that?
Well, I met with Mickey at this hotel, you remember?
Mm-hmm.
And I brought him some artwork. And we thought Whiplash in the comic book is a guy wearing tights with a big plume, big purple feather coming out of the top of his head. And that wasn't what we wanted, but what's the tech version of that? And we...
Yeah, it's you.
It's me, all right. Airplane mode. And so we were thinking of, we were concocting a version of a Russian, you know, thinking of Vigo in Eastern Promises and the tattoos, and that could be a cool inn. And so it's going to be a Russian, and then we're like, you know, Marv,
and the wrestler, between those two, between the fanboys, the independent film community, he was back with a vengeance. And it was like, my God, he could really, you know, there's a lot of people. We're not going to have a tremendous amount of screen time. Who's going to be able to be there, make an impression, you feel like this guy's in trouble? And so Mickey brought a lot of intensity to both those roles. We did some artwork, and I met with him, sat down with him, and we talked about everything. It was before all the awards things started to happen. We had a nice little connection, and I talked to people who worked with him. They said great things about him. His talent is undeniable. And so that started, that conversation ended, and then Robert was on the road with him doing the tour, because he was on the Tropic Thunder Awards tour. And he, I think, was lobbying every time they sat together to try to get him to join the movie.
I really worked you like a rib, didn't I? It was embarrassing. I was literally begging you in public.
Next question. We're from Korea, and I just wanted to ask over, from the first movie to the second movie, you're working with a lot more different characters and more actors, and I was wondering, how is that working with so many different new actors in the second movie? Like, what was the dynamic like? What was it like from the first? How is it different?
It was great. I mean, because these are all folks that I'd be happy to work with in any circumstance, in any medium. So it was just swell. As for the management of it, because I'm a little, I don't want to say neurotic, but I felt a little bit like a co-manager of a baseball team that just got an even better lineup in the spring. So I felt a little beholden to be partially responsible for their experience. But really a lot of that fell on Justin, which is why, I don't know why we haven't talked about it. He had a horrible neck problem during the whole shoot, didn't you? I mean, at one point I thought he was going to have his head removed.
And this poor guy here would show up and there would be, he would this poor guy, they would wheel him in and he would just type and hand us pages. I've never met anybody with a better work ethic or somebody who could bring inspiration to each scene that he would do. Because we talk a lot about how we bounce stuff around. The fact is that these guys had a really good rapport from Tropic Thunder, and he understood his voice and how to weave in and out of Robert's creative process very effectively. And to jump on board a franchise, I mean, I think he had, it was probably the sharpest learning curve for Justin than all of us, and he really did a fantastic job.
I'm sorry, before the next question, if you have your cell phone out, you need to put it away, please. Thank you.
Because of the feedback? Airplane mode.
I've got two questions. One is, how hard is it to balance the, keep it natural for the Tony Stark story while also sort of trying to feed in stuff that builds towards the eventual Avengers franchise thing? Is it hard to sort of shoehorn Nick Fury in there? Does it work for you? And the other thing is, can you talk a bit about Sam Rockwell's performance in here? He made an incredible Justin Hammer, and why didn't he make a big poster?
That was contractual.
The characters, the trick is to make them, to feather them in so they don't overwhelm the story and you don't suffer from villainitis. And so by having Justin Hammer and Mickey Rourke's character come together fairly early, you really have two storylines that are weaving. You don't have five separate storylines. And the same thing with Scarlet as Black Widow working her way into Gwyneth and Robert's story. So we really try to keep narrative flows going so that we didn't get too convoluted, because I get lose track of that stuff. I get, especially in sequels, as the franchises get more complex, I don't always remember what happened in the last movie. Not for nothing, I like to watch the stuff blow up, but I'm not going to do homework before I go see a sequel to be up on everything. And so we tried to keep that simple. And Justin Hammer, I mean, Sam Rockwell was somebody that I had known and thought would work really well with Mickey. He doesn't get intimidated by talented performers and movie stars. He's done a great job with a lot of people. And you guys had a great time.
We had a lot of fun. And I think we're doing this improvisation where I said, bring me some vodka, or this wine is shit. And I just moved the wine over and he took his glass and he goes, yeah, this is shit. So it was fun to work with.
Mickey, wait, well, I'm sorry. Aaron, hold the hell up. I think we waited long enough. Can we please talk about the parrot already? I don't know why the parrot is not on the poster.
He's home.
Yeah, you bought one after. Yeah. That one, and it's the one that's in the movie.
No, I have a different one.
Well, we have one, not the one, because we switched Paris.
I don't have Elvis. Elvis.
No, the other.
The real one.
The real one, yeah. And then you bought another one that you flew in.
I've got one that doesn't.
And then we switched it in the set. Yep. And then we made a scene about switching the bird. You know, yeah, that was really your bird. Marvel likes to save, cut costs where they can. We switched birds.
Like to cut costs so much you guys ate the second.
On a spit.
So, what and Gwyneth, first question is, you have played heroes lately, so what do you think the definition of hero? And Gwyneth, you give us some lifestyle advice lately from the website. Would you like to give us some advice?
Because
I'm having a hard time to lose my weight.
Wear a warm suit. I think a hero is someone who, if they're abroad or traveling, they go to the Goop website to find out what restaurants to go to, what clothing shops they might enjoy, what sites they should see. And they do that not fearlessly, but they do it in spite of their fear.
Actually, not this coming week, but next week, the Goop newsletter will be about my Ironman training regimen and how I lost weight and got in shape to play this part, so you can check it out.
Actually, this question is for the two of you as well. There's a real moonlighting thing going on between the two of you in the movie. The banter between you is great. But the kiss, of course, was very highly anticipated. How was it shooting that scene and finally getting that approval?
I couldn't get her off me. It was embarrassing.
It was great because both my husband and his wife were right there.
She said to me that I didn't know what I was doing. Like, it didn't feel good. And I'm like, you know what? First of all, we're all friends. So what would be creepy would be if I was coming off all sexy to you while we're... By the way, I've done that in movies, and it creeps them out. So what am I going to creep you out for? What did I just... I felt like I was going to swallow this mic cover for a moment. Despite what she said on set, she still thinks about it.
Question for Robert and question for John. John, notice that your glorified extra role from the first movie definitely got much more fleshed out. I was wondering why you decided to join in on the action yourself. And Robert, I noticed that your wife's name was in the credits as a producer, and she was not last time. I'm wondering what that meant for this film for you.
You want to swap questions?
Yeah, sure.
Do you mind if we swap? Can we swap answers? Could he answer, talk about Happy Hogan, I'll talk about Susan Downey? That'd be great. Just to we're going to answer this question a lot. Okay. Susan is a great producer who has, it's not like she came on board and became a producer because we're making Iron Man. Quite the contrary. We were funneling towards a start date, and we had a lot of ideas spread out. And we had bulletin boards, and Justin was there, and Robert was there, and Kevin, and myself, and Jeremy Latcham, with index cards trying to figure out how to make the work flow through. And she has tremendous organizational ability, and she understands Robert's creative process and understands the first movie and lived through it with us. And so Susan, who had a very strong background both in development and physical production, was able to come in and just help. It's like one of those shows where they're going to organize all your closets for you and make you throw out the clothes you don't need anymore. But it takes somebody who says, you're never going to wear that again. You're never going to fit in that.
Yeah.
And they throw it away or give it away or figure out what it's...
On a certain level, they might have thought she was going to come in and tame me or put me in check or whatever, but I was completely out of my mind.
They tamed us.
Power hungry. Let's talk about Happy Hogan. All right. There's three Happy Hogans in the movie. There's the Jon Favreau that was in actually excellent shape. He was boxing every day in pre-production and made it into the ring for the scene where he gets his ass handed to him by Scarlett. It was originally a longer scene, and maybe he was just too emasculated to actually let it be in the movie, but I think you laid the boots to him quite severely.
Is that not in the movie either?
Yeah, that's him.
Yeah. By the way, this is...
He's on a run. Let him look okay. It's in the movie.
Then about midway, he's struggling with a metafast, but occasionally binging on pizza, but then saying, this is crazy, I got to get back
in
the gym.
Can I have my question back?
By the time we were doing reshoots, they were framing him out of shots. Here's the thing, though. This is one of the things I love about you.
Oh, here we go. Now the nice.
Why don't we say it's?
Why don't we say it is? Done with me.
Yeah. Shall we do it?
Show me a dollar and a towel.
Okay.
We capture and walk me to the lobby.
You know what? I wouldn't have the upbeat part. I forgot it. Pressing on.
You know how to get downstairs, right?
I saw the movie last night. Everybody was fantastic. Great performances. Really impressive.
Thank you.
Multi-part question. Thank you. One, you kind of sidestepped the Sam Rockwell question, and in the
movie, I sidestepped. I'm like
in the lead up to the movie, there's been
Alan Greenspan.
Hundreds of stills, posters.
Yes.
Sam's in almost none of it, and he's noticeably absent today. Is there a falling out? Was he?
Yes.
Not happy with him?
You hit the mother load. No, I love Sam. Sam's doing a play. I hope to be working with him again.
I had that same question, though. I was wondering. I thought he must be doing a play or something.
Yeah, he's on Broadway doing a play right now. He's awesome. He's going to be at the premiere. You can ask him yourself then. He, ever since our first collaboration, when he was the gender unspecific concierge and maid. I knew he was. Thank you. I knew that he was an inspired dude. I wish he could be here selfishly because he's a fun, funny guy, and he really always was a fountainhead of ideas and great stuff. And I wish he could have been here. He can't. So unfortunately, there's no fire where that smoke is. But
and you considered it for Tony Stark as well, you said.
Well, we were putting lists together long before Robert. I even met with Robert, and it was talking
that's
about.
That's enough. It's embarrassing. You're embarrassing yourself.
But I thought he could be a sort of untraditional, interesting other way to go. As we were listing a lot of younger actors that didn't have a lot of experience and were a little bit more traditionally what you'd think for a superhero role. Then when I met Robert, pretty much we clicked, and I knew that was the guy. But just as Justin Hammer, I think you see like a cool, goofy, you know, image of what Justin Hammer wishes he was Tony Stark, and he really embraced that aspect of the character, and I think it's really fun for that way. He has a ball with it.
Thank you. And finally, Scarlett was fantastic as Black Widow. There was talk at one point of a spin-off movie for her. I think that anyone who sees the movie would love to see that.
I would love to see it. Hell yes.
Kevin?
Yes, absolutely.
My question's for John. We heard about a few of the scenes that might end up on the DVD. What other cool extras do you have planned for the DVD and Blu-ray release?
Well, we have, there's a lot of featurettes. We're running cameras behind the scenes all the time. We don't like to really show too much of it before the movie comes out to keep some surprises, but everything was very well documented, and we have, as you can see, a very interesting group of people. And so between the interviews, you get a really good sense. We're fans of these movies. Kevin and I are always swapping back and forth books and things about the movies that we grew up loving. And so we document it very well. And so there's going to be pretty extensive featurettes and then commentary this time around, and then also out deleted scenes that we thought would be interesting for people to see. So it's more a movie fan set of extras, people who really want to immerse themselves. If you don't, it's going to be boring. If you don't like that kind of thing, it's going to be. We did overkill on this one.
Next question right here.
Yes, hello. This question is for Gwyneth and Scarlett. If you could just tell us like a little bit more about your specific roles and how in this movie you have a strong, intelligent woman. You're not in the movie just as a sex symbol per se. Tell us a little bit more about that.
Well, I think that I've never really seen this kind of film of this genre where the female characters were their sex appeal was sort of came second. I mean, of course they're sexy characters and they're you know, when you have a sexy secretary or a girl, you know, swinging around by her ankles in a cat suit, you know, that's innately sexy. But the fact is that these characters are, they're intelligent, they're ambitious, they're motivated and calculated to some degree, and you know it leaves. You know, I probably would have, you know, to be just a pawn in a story of, you know, a whole bunch of men kind of, you know, fighting it out and you know, rolling around and getting down and dirty, and there you are to be like the sort of vision in a tight catsuit is sort of a boring thing to me. And I think that John really made that very clear in the beginning that he felt, as far as Black Widow was concerned, or that Natalie was concerned, that she was, you know, mysterious and nuanced and, you know, something to kind of peel back the layers to, and that there was something there. He wanted that. And, you know, I think that's why this film is so much more dynamic for me as an audience member. I mean, I've never been a huge fan of this genre, really, and I think because it was always sort of one note and very kind of explosive, and you know, I think this, because Gwyneth and I are able to sort of be the brains behind the operation in some aspect, there's kind of a happy medium there, kind of adds to the charm, the charisma of the film, of the finished product, you know.
Oh. I agree with Scarlett. I think it's a very smart decision actually to have women who are capable and intelligent, because it appeals to women. You know, so it's not only a film for 15-year-old boys. It's a film that can relate to a lot of people on a lot of levels. And you know, like a lot of my girlfriends. Sorry.
That's right.
Like it because of the romance, or you know, like Scarlett is in the trailer, and it's appealing. Like, oh, who is she? And it, you know, it doesn't look like, you know, it doesn't look gratuitous. It looks like there are interesting women in the movie, and you know, certainly from the first one too, that my character is quick and she's articulate, and you know, I think it makes it so that you know, when you take your kid, if you're a mom, it's really fun for you to watch as well. So it's nice to see women who are, you know, kind of aspirational and smart, sexy, all at the same time.
I think 15-year-old boys are that too.
It's oddly kind of old-fashioned, actually, in the best sense of the word. There's sort of that, these characters are like those fabulous femme fatales of the kind of golden age of Hollywood, that Betty Davis, more than the Jane Mansfield, you know. Which I think is so much more dynamic to watch.
Next question here. Hi, I'm Anna from Radar Online. Thanks for chatting with us today. My questions are for Ms. Paltrow again, and then also for Mr. Downey Jr. Ms. Paltrow, I'm wondering, you know, sort of working off that last question, if you had some kind of interior monologue or ideas about Pepper kind of beyond what we get from dialogue, which is quite plaintive and supportive, but that's mostly what we see. And for Mr. Downey Jr., I'm wondering about the physical
challenges and perhaps emotional, intellectual as well, if
this role,
and what the boundaries of that were for you.
Mm-hmm.
Whatever you want.
Whatever you say.
Yeah, they probably want to hear me first. let's see. Physically, I feel like Don and Scarlett and Mickey actually had a heavier load this time as far as just armature.
You do it all in CGI. It's like, fuck it, CGI. CGI it. I'm walking off.
Draw me.
draw me. But again, I think, we just labored really hard to say, like, okay, we're audience members who made the first Iron Man successful, and we're smart, which is kind of why we were drawn to it. So what do we expect? So we kept putting ourselves in, like, audience seats. And so me, the mental and emotional aspects and development of Tony were to me a lot more, it's strange to say personal, because it's not necessarily relating to my life, so to speak, but just the mythology of saying you're something and being that thing or something entirely different.
And also this whole idea of Howard Stark and the legacy and the shadow of that legacy that we always were talking about, Mickey and I, about being kind of two sides of the same coin, one who was able to escape that captivity and one who saw his father die in the ruins of improper recognition and having to reckon with that. So really all of the characters, you know, I mean, Black Widow, Natalie, in a certain place, is bringing me back to a extended family I've always had. And Mickey, as Anton, is telling me that that all is not well and people have vendettas for reasons that I might not understand, but I need to understand. And Rhodey is there saying, hey, you've always had me kind of on your wing, so why won't you really let me help you? And obviously the pepper thing is really about loving.
Thank you very much.
Ladies and gentlemen, Sam Rockwell. Sorry. Yeah, I was actually getting bored talking about that. We're going to talk about Goop. Go ahead, baby.
Follow that. There it is.
I'm sorry. Can you just refresh my memory?
I'm just curious about that. Guys, that's all the time.
What was it like?
Oh.
Thank you
so
much. If you all could just stay seated until the guest exits. Thank you.
Think so. You're in the middle of a question.
Yeah, well, that's
our life. Oh,
sorry, I didn't hear somebody else.
Yeah, it was the middle of it.
I apologize.
No problem. And can we put that back up?
Let me at least get my image back up. Hold on.
Just stand behind me and hold it up.
Yeah.
The inner monologue of Pepper, I think Pepper's trying to hold it all together. You see, without Pepper, the woman, this is what you get. Male bullshit, bubbling around, they can't even hang a poster. I mean, Pepper was doing this job. It was a much different story. No, I think, you know, Pepper is like a... Pepper tries to hold it all together. You know, she tries not to be reactive, and she tries to sort of steer him in the right direction. She's really like, you know, the great woman behind the man. And so I think that's sort of what runs through her mind. You dropped the poster.
Yeah. Oh, I've got a little self-conscious, strangely. As you're talking.
All right. Thank you, everybody.
Thanks.